Earlier this year, I decided to give HIMS a try in order to shed some weight I've been struggling to get off for the last 6 years, and I'm so glad I did. If you want to know what's really worth your time when it comes to losing weight, skip the guesswork and get weight loss by HIMS. HIMS offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications that now include Wegovy pill and Wegovy pen, plus lifestyle tips to support you along the way. With Wegovy at HIMS, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite and eat less, so success is within reach. Plus, Wegovy is the first ever GLP-1 pill for weight loss, so there's no needles needed, which is really kind of nice. Through HIMS, everything happens online. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if the treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. HIMS makes hitting your goals seamless by offering 24/7 messaging with your care team and in-app lifestyle and nutrition choices like recipes, meals, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, HIMS makes it simple to find a weight loss approach that fits your world and your wallet. If eligible, you'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as long as needed. Ready to reach your goals? Visit hims.com/40klore to get personalized, affordable plan that gets you. That's hims.com/40klore. hims.com/40klore. Weight loss by HIMS is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is a registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information and restrictions, visit HIMS.com. Summer is always changing how I get dressed. I want pieces that feel lighter and more breathable, things that are easy but still put together. That's why I keep going back to Quince. They focus on high-quality essentials that feel and look amazing, like breathable linen, soft organic cotton, well-made basics, but without the luxury markup. And that balance is what makes everything feel like elevated but still effortless. Quince European linen pants and shirts are perfect warm weather upgrade to add to your rotation, starting at just $34. Those linen pants I wear most days now that it's warming up because they're comfortable, they're breathable, but I still look well put together. So a really nice addition to my wardrobe. Their tees are soft and easy to wear, and their lightweight cotton sweaters are perfect for when it cools off a little bit. And everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands because they work directly with ethical factories to cut out middlemen, so you're paying for quality, not brand markup. Elevate your summer wardrobe. Go to quince.com/40klore for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/40klore for free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/40klore. You're listening to this podcast, so I know you've got a curious mind. Here's a helpful fact you might not know yet. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save over $900 on average. Pop over to progressive.com, answer some questions, and you'll get a quick quote on discounts that are easy to come by. In fact, 99% of their auto customers earn at least one discount. Visit progressive.com and see if you can enjoy a little cash back. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $946 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2024 and May 2025. Potential savings will vary.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to 40K Lorecast. Me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
Today, we'll be concluding our coverage of Raven Guard with the events of the Heresy right after Korax trying to rebuild a legion and eventually Korax deciding to go demon hunting. And then a little bit of coverage of them kind of post, because they did take about 7,000 years off in the lore. So,
I'm looking at 7,000. You're like, you're not wrong.
I'm not wrong.
They do have a decent amount of current lore, which is kind of fun, though.
Yeah. We'll get to it later, but it's funny. It's like M33, 34, 35, 36, just nothing. There's like a couple. I think they were part of the War of the Beast in one battle.
Hold on. You don't want to pull a hammy, bro. You got to stretch out. You got to get ready. You got to warm up. You got to do some sets. You got to be ready. Sometimes that takes 7,000 years.
Yeah. For those who don't know how you don't, but the 40K Lorecast is a weekly show in the lore of the Warhammer 40K universe, releasing every Monday, 7 p.m. Eastern. Following and commenting really does help, so thank you all for doing it. Also, you can check our updated show notes. You'll find our website, which links to a whole bunch of stuff, the YouTube channel for our Q&As, Brad's new YouTube channel. It's fancy. Now he's going to have to actually put stuff up on it.
I have.
Yeah. Along with links to our other show, The History of 40K, my other show, Retro Recall, about video games. Yeah, video games are fun. You know what's not fun? The Lion King. Anyway, it's not, by the way. Holy God. Aladdin's worse. Six one half dozen of the other. Or if you want to help us out, though, there's some great links below to help us to do. One is you can go to our website where you can purchase clothing from us, dice, objective markers. They might come back around. A lot of cool stuff.
I'm still mad about that. We'll talk about that at a different date.
We're going to do some casts. We'll tell you that we are going to do some casts in 11th edition. Once Brad and I get a hold of some rule books, like officially, so we won't get in trouble for having them, then we'll do some casts on it. we don't need GW sending emails to people. How did these two get a rule book and one of our friends getting in trouble? So we're doing it that way. You also, though, can support us via Patreon. Patreon's a wonderful way to actually help us, but also really help any artist. Lots of people you guys may like have them. Patreons are great. I actually am a member of a lot of Patreons for exactly this reason. Great way to support artists. And so those of you who do it for us, it's been great. We're trying to do as much as we can with it. You know, Brad's got his new channel. We're expanding out into some other avenues, etc. Our Patreon, as always, gets you this show and the History of 40K ad-free for $4.99 a month, or... we're still doing euros, 4.24. Yeah. So the good news is in 1 week, the euro hasn't shifted.
Boring.
Is it? Because, you know, unfortunately, we're after 2009. Because if it was pre-2009, it would have been 127 koruna. Yeah, that's right. Because Bratislava, named after Braslav, who wanted a legacy while running Slovakia in the 9th century, sort of. Because then the Germans called it Pressburg anyway, and Poznoy, and Pressburg. But then in 1919, it switched back to Bratislava. Why'd that happen in 1919, you ask? Read a book. Anyway.
Read a book.
Any book. It'll be pretty clear pretty quickly. All right. Bratislava. It's actually a really cool place for vacationers. It is lower cost as opposed to like London or Paris, but actually more so. It's quite cheap, but it's super fun. First off, the Slovaks are very friendly and very welcoming. And they have really good food that's extra filling. So you have like halusky is something I do like. It's kind of like a pierogi mix. Then you have the two of my real favorites, smazen eiser, which is fried cheese. You can never go wrong with fried cheese, unless you have Brad's GI tract, in which you probably can go wrong with fried cheese.
Yeah, man.
This is so much.
Yeah, but the in is almost worth the out.
No.
Honestly, have this stuff. It's a breaded fried cheese. Actually, that's a double for you, isn't it? But yeah. Either way.
Yeah, I will die.
For our problem. Yeah. And then there's also Luxe, which is just really good street food and fantastic. You also have really good stuff for sweet teeth, like Siski or a chocolate praen, which I like a lot. The Trindalek is like the cone-shaped thing. I'm not a huge fan of it, but a lot of people are. But if you want to go there to kind of drink, yeah, Slovakia has decided that they want to be good at this. You can go light with their ciders, and their ciders date back to like the invention of cider. And then you also have, what is it, Borovajcik, which I actually do have upstairs, which is kind of like a brandy. Or you want to go harder. So you have Slovakia and Tratanea. I think one of those is 52% alcohol. The other two is 74% alcohol. So, do not consume near open flame. Anyway.
So all I'm thinking is, let's do this.
Yeah, it's great. Slovakia is super fun. And if you like classic TV, Miami Vice, number one new hit show.
I'm going nowhere near Berlin.
Nowhere near Berlin. I stabbed a man in Berlin. All right. But with that, last link is always our Discord. I was going to close out with our Discord because it is a great place to interact with us and others. We've got a lot going on in it right now, especially in the lead up to 11th edition. This episode, I think, is releasing right about close to the end of May, early June. So we're going to be right on it. If you guys want to play the game, come in there. There's a lot of stuff we're doing around it for everybody. Brad's got his Friday night fights. You can kind of watch people play the game. Be a great way for us to be educating. And additionally, though, we're really pushing the Discord as a way to kind of interact with us and other people, questions, advice, all this stuff. It's turning into a really beautiful forum. And first, big shout out to our mods for taking care of that. They've done a really good job of cultivating something there that makes this thing genuinely special. But also shout out to all the members who are, the mods can only do so much. It's really the members who make a community. So big thank you to everyone who's already joined the Discord. Big thank you to everyone who's in the Discord. As I've said before, and we'll continue to say, I don't charge the Discord. We make $0 off the Discord. This thing exists only to have as a community. And the way that you all behave in there and the way you interact with each other really is remarkable. And I cannot thank you enough for it. So
boom.
With that, it's the end of a bad day for Istvan III. Horus showed up, showed he was a traitor. Him and Mortarion and Angron killed half their legions and a lot of the planet. Then a call goes out for, hey, who wants to kick some traitor ass? Korax and the Raven Guard were quick to respond because Korax both hated the traitors and he was the one that liberated Istvan. So he's kind of got, you know, a dog in the fight. He's joined by Vulcan and Ferris Manus, which made sense. I guess Fulgrim kind of made sense to these guys, but then Conrad and Lorgar, no one should have invited those two. Again, Fulgrim's the one I could see sneaking in. All right.
I can't believe Conrad stabbed me in the back.
Well, he's holding a knife that says backstab knife. Like, come on, guys. All right. For Korax, when the betrayal occurs, he's stuck in the open, which is not ideal for a stealth faction. They were literally just moving back to get reinforced or resupplied when everyone shot at them while they're right next to the Urgal Depression.
Well,
the first round of
hold, please, because you say it like, oh no, the Raven Guard were stuck in the open and then a firefight showed up and they didn't really have anywhere to take cover. No, they were stuck in the open when nuclear bombs started launching down.
Yeah. About 75,000 Raven Guard die in this first attack. So again, stealth legion in open, bad. Also, their stealthy to nuclear bomb from orbit turns out not that stealthy.
No, trying to hide.
Yeah, the dive, duck, dip, dodge, and dodge.
5D's dodgeball.
Yeah, it doesn't really work as well against nuclear weapon. So Korax and Vulcan, though, did survive, and they made it to the Urgal Depression, which is...
Well...
Which sounds like something they would all have after the fact, but it's just a big hole.
they survived for 11 minutes and 18 seconds. Well, Korax survives longer, but continue.
Yeah, so what happens is inside of this depression, Vulcan and Korax get into not a fight, but an argument. And Vulcan's saying, look, let's just fight our way to the drop ships and then we'll get out of here. And Korax goes, that's a terrible idea. Let's just run into the wilderness and hide. There's no way we can get there. And so they both have a disagreement and Korax goes his way and Vulcan does his thing. Korax was correct, by the way, because the second later, the Iron Warriors see the dropships and just blow up all the dropships and go, well, you're not using that one to get out. And then right afterwards, Korax runs into Lorgar, which is another one of those great Lorgar stories where Lorgar decides, I'm going to go make a name for myself. I'm going to go beat up on people who've been fighting a nonstop battle for like 20-something, it wasn't 20, but number of hours. They're heavily wounded. I'm going to go in there and prove myself, and proceeds to get the shit beat out of him by Korax.
Badly.
Just absolutely. Actually, know that Lorgar also brought with him his version of
first
possessed. The first possessed. So he's running at them. I've got these super soldiers. I am going to kill Korax. Korax, in a genuinely exhausted Korax, turns to it and goes, nope, kills every single possessed. At which point Lorgar gets mad and goes, now I'm going to beat up Korax. And Korax goes, nope, and almost kills Lorgar.
Yeah, I mean, in a laughable battle because he just dropped an RKO out of nowhere on him. And just the only reason he didn't completely smoke him is Conrad shows up.
Yeah, as Korax is about to kill Lorgar, Conrad jumps at him. And Korax has to go, all right, fine, jetpack up. And just shoots himself out of combat. Kind of wish he'd killed Lorgar.
Your smoke bomb.
Exactly. At the same time, this is the moment where Vulcan takes the atom bomb to the face.
To the face. Legitimately, to the face.
But he's not part of this story. We're talking Raven Guard. Korax then actually does this weird thing. After saying we shouldn't go back to our dropships, flies himself to a dropship and steals a Thunderhawk that he basically commissions.
And he also gets shot down like instantaneously.
Instantly, yeah. It's this thing of because like they see it, hey, there's a Thunderhawk taking off. Unlike apparently coming down, that's how Conrad got onto
Look, McCray. Man, we didn't see any life forms on this one.
Yeah. Actually, it's the same with Flight of the Eisenstein. Basically, apparently none of the ships in orbit can shoot things leaving orbit and going down, but coming up from orbit.
Shoot it down all day long, baby.
No problems. The ship crashes. Korax survives because, again, he's a Primarch. And then he uses his psychic powers to go find what remains of his legion. Because he told his legion, run away. Yeah, run away. And they'd all fled into the mountains. They do this kind of campaign in the mountains.
I like this. This is fun, though, because they ninja assault.
This story's good. Yeah.
Yeah, they ninja assault a huge amount of scouting parties and play a stick and move for a long time here. You know what I mean? Well,
it's a matter of how you want to read the story. I read the story in more of a funny sense, but not in a bad way, where exactly what Brad was saying, they're coming in there, and as these small bands of to be cast, but traitors, search parties going out, they're ambushing them and killing them before they can even get a word out, right? Until eventually, Angron goes, you know, you can't ambush me and my entire legion walking basically shoulder to shoulder through a forest.
I can only though imagine that Angron's listening to this and going, so every one of you guys went like a bad horror movie and split up to find that they got to take it out.
What did he go? So what if me and all of my berserkers just walk in a straight line towards them? What are they going to do about it? Ambush all of us? Like, well, I guess not. Cool. Plan B time. And so they do. The world leaders and Angron, along with the berserkers, they start searching and eventually they start chasing the Raven Guard. They figure kind of where they are. And they chase them and they chase them and chase them up until there's basically, I can't remember if it's a cliff or a wall. Either they're about to fall
into they told them that they chased them into a valley kind of deal.
Yeah, the Raven Guard were out of places to go. That's all I know. And so they were stuck there. And as Angron and the berserkers went to charge in, out of the clouds above comes a ton of Prometheum and just artillery and just nonstop firepower, just blasting the ever-living hell out of his legion. Because a Raven Guard captain named Bran had flown there. Again, remember, like I said, you can come down from orbit and no one will see you. Had flown all the way back from
Deliverance.
Yeah, to Istvan because he was having dreams. And he was having these psychic dreams of his legion in trouble, because he couldn't have gotten there that fast.
Primarch in trouble.
Yep. So he comes in, gets down there, and Korax, everyone jumps on the Thunder. I think it's multiple Thunderhawks, and they get up to orbit. Now, as I said, you can sneak down, but sneaking up is a problem. So they go to sneak up, and of course, the world leader ships see them. However, all the Raven Guard that Korax had found weren't all Raven Guard. A lot of them.
By the way, it's the majority of them at this point in time.
It might be.
Because there's few Raven Guard left, and all the active members are Alpha Legion because they suck into the Legion.
Yeah, this was planned ahead of time. So Alpha
Legion
and Omegon were told by the Cabal that the Raven Guard, after the events of Istvan, would come into possession of a critical asset. That's what they called it. They wouldn't tell them what it was, but there would be a critical asset. So they knew this. So the Alpha Legion used their surgeons to change the appearance of a bunch of their, you know, legionnaires to look like Raven Guard. And I guess somehow smell like Raven Guard because Korax is a psyker.
We covered this in Alpha Legion. It was so funny, though, because there's a couple things that happened that are a big deal. Because for them to get out, they had to have Alpha Legion help. But also, when Angron says, I'm going to smash these guys, and all of a sudden, Steve Buscemi shows up and goes, hello, fellow Primarchs. Yeah. It's me, Horus.
I did love this. Yeah. So as the ship's going away, because it's got a bunch of Alpha Legion on it, Angron, of course, like, shoot that ship down. And World Leader's like, I'm going to shoot the ship down. And then on the World Leader ship, Horus walks out and goes, hey, don't shoot that ship. And everyone goes, well, Horus says that.
Also, why is Horus here?
Yeah. But it was Omegon or Alpharius. We don't know.
Either one. But it's still funny to me in the first place because not only was it not Horus, but also Why is Horace even be here, man?
He's on the wrong ship. And they're like, oh, okay, no problem.
He's like, I'll see you guys later. I was going to hit the spa. Take it easy, guys. Just don't shoot that specific ship. Remember that.
I heard you guys had nice chili dogs over here. So I swung over for a Coney dog. There we go. There's a Midwest reference. I don't do enough of those. So anyway, Korax and his legion, heavy air quotes on the legion part there, Korax and his like 11 remaining friends decide to go to Terra because they are all but destroyed. And also don't forget, all of their gene seed is still on Istvan 5 that had just been nuclear bombed. So they cannot rebuild their legion. They do not have enough gene seed to do it. So Korax's idea is, I'm going to go ask Dad for help. And he gets to Terra and he finds a lot of resistance to his plan, namely Malkador and Rogel Dorn. They're not against his plan. They just have stuff that they
wanted. Yeah, that was to say, they were putting stuff in order. Also, this, I like it. They give a reason, but there is no reason whatsoever that he could have literally checked a box and moved on. Like, but
this is fun. So I enjoy this bit too. So Korax is told, wait your turn. But then Korax remembers this really important thing. He's the baby. So the baby always gets what it wants. So he uses his psychic powers to ask Dad basically for a loan. And the Emperor is super busy to defend him. He has, because this is post-Magnus breaking the Webway product. So the Emperor is fighting Infinity Demons.
Yeah, I was going to say Infinity Demons. He's just, and he's powering the Astromonicon.
Yeah. And he's being attacked by the gods of chaos, like psychically.
All of them.
And he's having to help in the rebuilding and preparing of Terra for the coming invasion. But when the youngest calls, you answer the phone because he might need to borrow the Porsche. You let him borrow the Porsche. Korax explains, hey, this is what happened. We're all dead. Can you help me? And the Emperor does a quick thing and goes, oh, yeah, I forgot.
I have a secret volcano base.
Yeah. But he also does, it's actually funny. He does two things. First, he says, by the way, here's what's really going on. He tells Korax about the truth about Horus, the truth about the heresy, and the forces of chaos. And then he goes, oh, by the way, that thing where I made all of you, it's still sitting over there. It's in the garage.
I'm not that far off when I said volcano base. It is a underground mountain base.
But it's booby-trapped, just in case the wet bandits come to attack. I'm not really sure what the situation here is, but that's kind of how...
That's so specific, by the way.
It is.
It is what they're called.
But take it, though. Take that image and now do the entire scene of him fighting through that. But instead, it's Kevin McCarthy.
McAllister, thank you very much. McAllister,
sorry. It's been a while. So Korax asks, hey, can I borrow my dad's most prized possession? And he goes, yeah, but only with supervision. So he sends Korax's legion and custodes to the origin of the Primarch product. This includes Alpha Legion.
I also assume that at some point in time, the Emperor was looking for something and saw in his wallet. Oh, they could have put in the 1234 code. None of this would have happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Over the course of this process, a lot of legionnaires die. I assume from like paint cans swinging down to the marbles on the floor, maybe a red hot door.
Red hot door knob.
Told you, it's a lot funnier if you think of it that way. But the Raven Guard succeed, and they're able to grab a sample of just their original gene seed, no one else's. And then they abscond with this thing back to Deliverance. They get back to Deliverance. And they take it, and the first 500 aspirants they plant it in, it's an incredible success because this gene seed is basically perfect. This is the purest version of it. And so it's great. Ah. These neophytes are like the best. They're called the Raptors, and they join the forces. They're basically super soldier. They're super soldiers. Yes.
This is the time, we said this a bunch when we did the Alpha Legion cast, when you have to actually pause because the Alpha Legion struck and you have to go, you just helped us. You're just about to screw everything up. Whose side are you on?
Well, the Alpha Legion seemed to be on side chaos, like chaos in this, not chaos, but chaotic. It seems more like that. They don't want anyone just to get
chaotic neutral with the actual chart they roll on for their actions for the day. Yeah, because basically the Alpha Legion basically infects this gene seed with a poison from the Dark Mechanicum to wreck the gene seed, mutating them into beasts. again, they're trying to grow the chapter from a barbershop quartet to something, and they immediately ruin it.
Yeah. And so what happens is anyone implanted with this gene seed turns into a monster. Not all the way chaos spawn monster, but they've got, like, some guys have tentacles. There's a whole, some of them can't even hold bolters. They're a whole mess, but they're pretty beat up. They're still Astartes. However, they're still also Raven Guard. And Korax looks at them still as brethren, kind of like with Sloth, you know, Sloth love Chunk. Chunk love Sloth.
Do the truffle shuffle.
Yeah. All right, but Omegon, who'd also snuck in this action, stole what was left of the pure gene seed and was supposed to give it to Fabius Bile, but then he destroys or corrupts it and then gives it to Bile. Different story for a different time. We're not really sure what he's up to. The funny thing, though, is at the while he's trying to run away with this good gene seed, he then turns to, for whatever reason, try and destroy whatever is left of the Raven Guard gene seed, which would effectively end the Raven Guard. In doing so, he kills the lead apothecary who's overseeing the project. And as that apothecary dies, that apothecary turns to those, we'll call them the Sloth, a Sloth Raven Guard, who are the monstrosities, and says, hey, help us. And they do. These horrifyingly mutated Astartes charge in, and the Alpha Legion have to retreat because they actually can't fight them because, by accident, they're actually more powerful than regular Astartes. They're basically good possessed is what they are, for lack of a better phrase. For this action, though, Korax refuses to destroy the mutant Raven Guard, cough, cough, for now. And he has them, yeah, and he has them join the Raptors. And the idea is that these mutants are going to fight side by side with the super, super soldiers. So the Raptors, for this really period of time, are kind of a goofy chapter. And we're going to deal with more of them later. But the more important part of the story, without this fresh gene seed, the Raven Guard cannot do what they want to do.
And they're just rebuilding unbelievably slow, which is why they're kind of a non-factor on this. So
yes and no.
So, at the time, yes. Yes, come on.
Yeah, they're not able to take part in any major actions, but we'll get to what they're going to do in a second. Because much like what happened with the Salamanders and Iron Hands was even harder. But they had to effectively harvest gene seed from Korax. I don't know. I assume it's like giving blood. You can only do it every few weeks. So it takes them a while. So this is their plan is now going to be, we're going to rebuild this legion, but it's going to take millennia to do it. But Korax being more warped than a normal Primarch actually makes it even slower because the one thing we didn't mention the last cast, they have the highest attrition rate in the gene seed implantation in the Raven Guard. I think it's because he's too heavily warped.
He's super warped. But also this in my inbred theory or slash opinion period is about the time that Korax really starts to lean in his vengeance part of his personality. Because before, yeah, it was more justice, some vengeance. Now he's just pissed.
Yeah. Korax has decided that I have a small legion, but I can still affect change. And he this is great.
I know, sorry, but you just set it up on that. He's got a small legion, but he's got big legion energy. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
There we go. Yeah. We're gonna cut the motion of the ocean guide.
I was just sorry. You threw that one up there. I'm like, I'm leaving
it alone. I didn't realize it, David, but yeah.
Leaving it alone.
I'm not even editing that out. All right. All right. So we're going with it.
We'll be right back after a quick break. Starting a business is a massive challenge. You have an idea, but before you can ever get to doing that idea, you have to do 100 other tasks that are not that idea. One of the biggest challenges can be the commerce side of a business. I learned this the hard way, but finding a quality partner for your business is one of the most important things you can do. Companies that will actually support you as you grow and, more importantly, help you grow. For millions of businesses, that tool is Shopify. Shopify is the commerce platform behind millions of businesses around the world and 10% of all e-commerce inside the U.S. Accelerate your efficiency, whether you're uploading new products or trying to improve existing ones. Shopify is packed with helpful AI tools that write product descriptions, page headlines, and even enhance your product photography. Best yet, Shopify is your commerce expert with world-class expertise in everything from managing inventory to international shipping to processing returns and beyond. And what if you get stuck? Shopify is always around to share advice with their award-winning 24/7 customer support. Tackle all those important tasks in one place, from inventory to payments to analytics and more. No need to save multiple websites or try to figure out what platform is hosting the tool that you need. Everything is all in one place, making your life easier and your business operations smoother. Start your business today with the industry's best partner, Shopify, and start hearing. Sign up for your $1 per month trial today at shopify.com/lore. Go to shopify.com/lore. That's shopify.com/lore. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough, and that can lead to overwhelm and counting down the minutes until kids are back in school. And many worry they're wasting the days of sunshine. I know for me, summer can be a little bit tough, as I'm juggling a lot more with work, in addition to the regular families, hobbies, and friends. I often feel overwhelmed, and that overwhelming leads to feelings of stress, as I worry that I'm letting others down. This, at times, leads me to actually dread the summer months, which then makes me mad at myself for dreading some of the best times of the year. With BetterHelp, you can be matched with quality therapists with care and reliability. BetterHelp does the initial matching work for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right the first time. And if you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from their tailored recommendations. BetterHelp is one of the world's largest online therapy platforms, with over 30,000 therapists having served over 6 million people globally. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com. What he decides to do is basically do terrorism against Horus. He's going to destroy their supply bases, attack shipments.
He was also booby-trapping shipment. He was actually just putting bombs in supplies and stuff like that.
Yeah, because his idea is, I can't help the Emperor and the forces of Terra like by standing next to them, but I can make the invasion by Horus less problematic. And there's a bunch of these that he does. One of them is the Dark Mechanicum Shipyard, Capel 5642A. And I like this story. It's a nothing story. It's like 2 seconds, but it's cool. They built a shipyard hidden in an asteroid belt, and it's producing cruisers for Horus's fleet.
Come on, give us the good part. They show up and do a 360 no-scope.
Yeah. So this thing is, because it's so remote, it's not defended, and the Raven Guard are super stealthy. So they just come into the system completely undetected, arm all the torpedoes, fire them, and then translate out of
immediately.
They were actually out of the system before the first torpedo hit, and it blew up everything. So yeah, they did the no look like Kobe and freaking just took it out. Cool as hell. Now, during the heresy, one thing I should point out is the GW writers, like, that story there is something that they did a lot, where they used the Raven Guard to tell background stories, because the traitors are up to a ton during the Horus heresy, and a lot of it is critical for the end, but not that interesting of a story. So in order to tell it, they usually have the Raven Guard or Korax being the protagonist in dealing with them. Another one, because that one was, well, hey, how did Horus get ships? Simple. The Dark Mechanicum built secret facilities where they were building them.
Everywhere.
And every now and then, the Raven Guard would find one and kill one. Another one was Fabius Bile. So Fabius Bile was really invested during the heresy in kind of doing the Chaos Primarch project, for lack of a better phrase. His goal was, it's why he wanted that pure gene seed. He wanted to make a new style of Legionnaire that was bigger, stronger, faster than the existing Astartes. And he's calling them Legione Superior, which is terrible naming mechanic.
Yeah, but they eventually became, to be fair, this is just the Primaris Marine project.
This is the Primaris project. I'm just going with Legione Superior.
I know, but it's just funny because they pick this up later and go, oh man, I can't believe where we found this. Yeah, I thought it up. My call was like, I thought it up all myself.
Yeah, I'm just saying they could have actually called it Primaris. It would have been better writing, by the way, to call it Primaris Project, because it would have been a lot funnier to be like, so to call it Fabius Biles Primarch Project. Then later you're like, well, wait, isn't that what Call called it? Shut up, it's not important. So the thing about these new super, super soldiers is they actually were pretty good. Korax discovers this and goes, all right, I'm going to go kill Bile and kill these guys. Horus is not getting this. And he gets there, and the Legione Superior actually capture him because there are super, super soldiers. Actually better than Primaris Marines, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I mean, he had him juiced up because he was trying to make Primarchs, actually. I mean, this becomes the Primaris Project, but whatever.
Yeah. What happens is Korax is captured, and he's saved by a guy named Garethi Arendi, who we can probably cover later. Garethi Arendi is a kind of a sad story because he also survived the Istvan V massacre. But he may have done it by sacrificing other loyalist Marines to keep himself alive. And so he's a cool character. We'll probably we dive more into Horus Heresy, cover a bit more of him. But another thing, one of my favorite ones, I think, of all the things that Korax does is when he decides to help out Leman Russ. Been a while since we covered this, but for those who don't know or don't remember, Leman Russ went on a punch that guy in the face.
What's wrong with that?
Everyone supported this idea. He and his wolves attacked Horus, and Leman just jammed his spear into Horus. Then he barely escaped back into the void. And by barely escaped, I mean he left, and Abaddon, the sons of Horus, did not take well what he did and were making it their personal mission to kill Russ and all the space wolves. And so they're careening through space, running away from them. Around the same time, Korax went full goth and was getting sullen. I don't like this story, I'll be honest, but I like the later part of it.
When he put in the Smiths and hit repeat. Got it.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. I don't want to be a pawn anymore. Blah, blah, blah. I will show the fates by killing myself. I didn't care for this story.
You know who also did that? Conrad.
Yeah, I just don't care for these stories where it's like, but whatever. That being said, he had this dude with him called a Prefactor, which is in the Imperial Army of the Therian Cohort, the guy you mentioned last time, the Imperial Guard who got assigned the worst duty possible. Because seriously, like, there's nothing. I thought it's bad being a Remembrancer with the Space Wolves.
Space Wolves.
Because you have to run with no armor next to the dude who's running into gunfire. But this is actually worse because you're accompanying a stealth legion and you're not stealth. So every time that they do anything, everyone assumes it's you. And so they just get wrecked over and over again. But this Prefactor named Marcus Valerius, again, sorry, this one drives me nuts because I think it's an homage to Publicius Lincius Laniarius, which is Valerian, who, if you guys don't know who Valerian is, he's a failed emperor of Rome who got captured by the Persians and died. But before he did that, he jacked up the Roman Empire really bad, losing Antioch and Armenia. The only reason he's famous is because, well, he made a lot of saints, not in the good way. Well, I mean, I guess not if you're the saint, because Saint Pontius, that was him. So if you're a beekeeper, Saint Lawrence, cooks and bakers, Saint Denis, that's Brad's favorite, the patron saint of headaches. That's him, by the way, Saint Denis. Saint Eugenia, who's interesting. I like her a bit more. Saint Patrocles, who's against demons and fever. So you might as well use that one too, Brad. And then the weirdest one is Saint Fructosius, who's the patron saint of fasting. That's a thing.
It is definitely not my patron saint, yeah. Man.
I'm not Catholic, but again, degree in religion, so this stuff comes up. All right, but Marcus Valerius, he could see the future. Well, or at least he saw visions. And he kept claiming it was the emperor working through him, which it does kind of track to. He's always, his visions are good.
I'm 50-50 on this because I do think that he was trying to steer somebody he held in regard on a better path. That's what I
think. He was, but the level of accuracy in his visions makes me think this actually is the emperor reaching out into him and giving them him to help.
Either way, it's the same result. He's trying to steady his nerve. He's trying to put him back on a path. Also seeing that he was on a path that was going to bring him heartache in the first place, because it was going against his nature.
That's true. I think the way you have to look at it is I'm of the perspective that Korax was the emperor's favorite son at this point. And so that's why I think it's the Emperor working through this guy to help Korax on his journey. If you don't feel that way, then it can be equally the other way. It just, that's why I go the way I go with it. But Valerius had this vision of the Space Wolves in danger, very specifically where it was. And he tells Korax the vision. And Korax goes, yeah, you know what? I like Lehman Russ. He was cool to me. Let me go help him out. And so he goes to the Yarent system, basically just in time, because Bjorn, the Space Wolves, are at the end. The Sons of Horus are going to kill them, until out of nowhere, these stealth attacks start picking off the Sons of Horus. It's that movie scene where like the guys in the back just get pulled off and just disappear because the ninja assassins are there. That's basically it. They keep picking at him until Abaddon gets pissed and decides to go after the Raven Guard instead of the Space Wolves, which as soon as he does, all the Space Wolves go, yeah, we're going to leave now. And then they all leave. And then, by the way, the Raven Guard do the exact same thing. I'm like, yeah, we're also out. But
backflip.
You know, yeah, all Abaddon sees is a giant middle finger as everyone leaves. Now, afterwards, Russ wakes up and he's really happy to see Korax. And the two make their way back to Deliverance, where they randomly meet up with a lion who was doing a very fun thing. This is post-Davin, where now the Warp Storm has kind of come down just enough that the lion can't get back to Terra, but he can get around and is just going on an ass-kicking mission of traitors.
Well, I love this because I love everything about the lion being such a psycho about this. He's like, I can't get back to defend Terra, but I can spite all of the home worlds.
And that's what he does. This meeting, by the way, would have been so short. The lion turns to Lehman and says, hey, what do you say we go blow up every single homeworld of these traitors? I don't know if there's a shorter word than yes, but that's what Lehman would have said. And Korax goes, hey, I don't have a lot of legionnaires, but I can at least help. And so the three of them just go out and just start wrecking homeworlds. But like, screw you guys. You know, we're going to bank on our buddies can defend Terra. And while they're doing that, we're destroying all your homeworlds.
Sometimes you get a spite.
It's awesome. It's such a great story.
I just hate.
Nope. I hate all of you. Watch this. Oh, it's a nice homeworld you got there. Too bad if something bad happened to it. But we then get to the end of the heresy. Obviously, the Raven Guard are not at the Siege of Terra because they were elsewhere. What's interesting, though, is at the conclusion of the Siege of Terra, all the Loyalist Primarchs assemble except Korax. Everyone else takes part in the Grand Council of Reconstruction. Korax doesn't. Now, when Gilliman issues the Codex Astartes, Korax does comply because he sees the wisdom in it and he does know it's the right idea. So he splits his forces. And even though there's not a lot left, he does make, for the second founding, the Black Guard, the Raptors, which already existed, obviously, and the Revilers. So there are now four, there's one main, three successors.
I think that Korax is already planning his bailage at this point in time.
And it's interesting. The truth is, of all of the legions to split up, this is the best one to do it. As we covered the very first episode, they're very similar to Death Watch. The Death Watch operate very independently. So to say to them, hey, you should break your legion up into independent bodies, Korax might have at that point been like, yeah, strategically, that actually makes sense anyway.
Also, I was already kind of doing that.
Exactly. Korax, though, at this moment, starts to really struggle with himself as an identity. I believe it's because he's the only Primarch with a true grasp of the severity of what's going on. Because the Emperor had told him all about Chaos, what it really is, the threat it poses. And now the Emperor is dead. Half of his brother Primarchs have fallen to Chaos. And yes, the galaxy is returning to peace because the scouring is going on. But more importantly, Gilliman is doing the right
Gilliman thing. Stuff. But still, exactly. Things are pretty wrecked, man. Exactly. Also, they also don't know that this could just happen. He doesn't know that this can't happen just again pretty quickly. You know what I mean? What happens with the Chaos Powers? Just choose a new champion.
Exactly. And so he knows that evil will return to the galaxy. He's very aware of this. And he goes back and becomes sullen, which is, all right. I don't love.
Put back on Morrissey.
Yeah. So, okay. Here's my thing. And I'm going to gripe about this for a second. GW likes to put a gene flaw in some of the legions, and they do a really good job in the case of the Blood
Angels. It is all because everybody got some sort of taint from when they got scattered.
It's not all. Some guys got a hangnail. Okay?
That's my point. Still a flaw.
It's not the 13th, it ain't. But anyway.
Your flaw was you guys became dorks.
Perfect. Yeah. Perfect in every way. Yeah. So this is where the thing, like, I think the Blood Angel's flaw is really well written. I think it's actually more post the death of Ferris Manus. The Iron Hands one is good. Some of these flaws are good. Some of them are lame. And the one for the 19th, I'm sorry, I think it's lame. They call it the Sable brand, in which we first see it after their fight with the Psykers back on Terra. But in effect, Korra, they all get this like just sullen disposition where they actually become eventually insubordinate. And it's dumb and I hate it. But
yeah,
Korax decides.
Hold on. You know what?
Korax is fixed to it. I like.
Fine. Something I just want to say. Yeah. You hate this, but the Trifold Path, Path of Shadow is super awesome, which is effective.
Yes.
It's almost like the Way of the Warrior aspect shrines from Eldar. It has a full focus of how you approach dealing with
the rage. That's a great way of looking at it, except you know this is stolen from yoga, right? I know your physique. I know yoga hasn't come up a lot.
I tried yoga once and then I realized I couldn't touch anywhere and I just lifted more heavy weights.
Exactly. Like I built like a bowling ball.
Yoga, no. Yoga seems bad. Lift heavy more. Yeah. But I like this quite a bit because they go into how to.
Let's go into what it is first. Yeah, so the whole concept here is that Korax has a legion that every now and then they get really depressed and sullen. So he decides to give them purpose. And the Trifold Path is a way to give you a purpose and goals to achieve. And it's got three elements. So go ahead. I just wanted to make sure people understand why.
I like this quite a bit because it gives you that focus. Again, it's very aspect shrine-ish, you know what I mean? And what you're trying to focus on to deal with problems. So they give you're mastering the ambush, which I like quite a bit. That basically, he almost saying you can wait indefinitely for the perfect strike, mastering the ability for the second stage, which is stealth. They want
is this Cao Yan or Monk Ka?
Cao Yan, patient hunter.
Okay. I'm just saying that this comes up a few times in the game.
Yeah. It's just you want to wait patiently to strike. And to do that, you have to basically be the perfect stealth warrior. You have to use your innate ability to effectively become invisible. So I like this quite a bit.
But it doesn't make sense because it's the first one and the second one's a lot. That makes more sense.
I know. I'm not saying that make sense.
It's a trifold path, not the triforce. You do have to do these in order.
Yeah.
So the first one is getting really good at ambushing people.
But you need to be stealth first. The second one
is being really good at stealth.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, how did you get there, man?
I'm well aware that they're out of order. And I'm pretty sure that everybody goes, you have to start over here. But the number says you have to start here. You're like, you don't. Everybody knows that in the handbook that they give you, it says to start here, but you really start here. But the last one is the biggest deal, which is vigilance. Yes.
And this is the hardest one. Very few people achieve vigilance because it requires you to have basically the faith to power through, no matter the odds. And Korax couldn't do this, candidly.
Yeah. And the thing is, you have to take faith. Well, it's also faith that the Imperium is going to survive in the background. I mean, there's bigger things to the Trifold Path than just achieving one goal. Yeah. You have to have faith effectively in the Emperor, in the Imperium, that you're doing the right thing. And then because you have faith that you are following the correct path, then you can succeed because of it. It's effectively the Sith code, but in reverse, because you're not just trying your own personal power on it.
And I think of this one, the best example of this one kind of not coming through is when we talked about in the last cast, when Korax, that comptroller, decided to release the animaphage on everybody, and Korax abandoned a successful campaign to go kill one dude brutally. That is not following vigilance. Vigilance, this third part of the path, is you send your Moritas to go kill him, but focus on the task. Get it done correctly, because not doing that will cost lives.
Yep.
And so it's...
You're losing. This is where if you lose focus, you will have innocents die. You will not complete your missions. And I felt that he knew he was not achieving those. And he was already kind of going into pretty big vengeance in the first place, but... I do like the Trifold Path quite a bit. I love the fact that he put these teachings out of this is how we're going to go about and do things.
I love, like I said, the reason for the Trifold Path I hate. the trifold path I like. So I like to believe GW wrote the trifold path and went like, well, why are they doing it? And so I went, I don't know. And then it's like, we have a print deadline, write something quick. So we got the, they're all so sad. But anyway, let's get to the end of Korax in the lore. So the first, Korax has this weird moment. And I think the biggest problem he has is he's accepting my opinion, but he's accepting how bad the warp is and all the problems. And he goes back to Deliverance and he decides he has to kill all of those mutated
Astartes. Which is a dick move, by the way.
Oh, yeah. This is Valdor Thunder Warrior style. But he does it, my opinion, he does it because he realizes these beings have demon in them.
And, which is another reason which is why I still think that he's a wild self-hater, because he's super warp infused himself.
Well, then what's he do? Goes into the warp. That's the point. So he kills these creatures who are probably the closest thing to corrupted Raven Guard. Yes, they fought on the side of good when the time came of it, but in Korax's mind, their attachment to the demons of the warp is bad. And then Korax just bails. And well, he grabs the ship.
He sits for a year.
Yeah. Now, when he bails, he does something that made me groan out loud when I read it. The last thing he says to his legion is nevermore. The level of hate I have towards that, I cannot express it in enough words on this cast. Don't do it. Leave it alone.
You didn't say, so saith the raven?
Yeah, leave it alone. Why? In what? Like, here's my issue. I actually think a lot of the writers at GW are very well educated, know a lot of stuff. That's the kind of stuff a first year English major would have written. That's what upset me about that. There's a thousand ways he could have done it.
With his acoustic guitar?
Yeah, he could have done, or just pick a different, if you want to do it well, pick a different Edgar Allan Poe, like, pun. Yeah,
he's doing his poems and then singing Hey There, Delilah.
But he's got a bunch of other ones. Yeah. Annabelle Lee, Alone, To My Mother, Tamerlane. You could have done, there's a ton of stuff Edgar Allan Poe has done. Just use a reference from one of those and let it be, you know, somewhat subtle. No, but
should have done.
Anyway.
Told his legion, if you're not first, you're last.
You're last. Now, I will say we did get more Korax lore a few years. I don't know when this book came out, but it was awesome. So we don't know where Korax is forever. I mean, playing the game, we're talking decades of, oh yeah, Korax is in the warp somewhere. And then we get one little snippet, and it's one of my favorite newer bits of the lore. So Lorgar has apparently finally achieved demon apothesis, all right? And he goes to celebrate by making the word bearers erect a bunch of temples and monuments. This is all in the Eye of Terror, honoring him, the Chaos Gods, because he's going to then use that to channel the powers of the warp into himself, and he's going to go attack the Materium. But while building it, all the workers start dying, and a bunch of word-bearer legionnaires start dying. And when I say dying, I don't mean like, oh, I've caught a cold and I've killed over. No, slaughtered and ripped limb from limb. And so basically by the shadows themselves. So anytime they went to work, because apparently there's shade when you're working on a world inside of the Eye of Terror, there's still a sun or whatever. But if you got too close to one of the shadows, you would just basically explode.
Exploded, yeah.
Yeah, or just blood and gore, like a 90s, like one of the Doom knockoffs we got, right? And so they all just stopped going into the shadows until it was a captain or a sorcerer, I can't remember exactly which one it was, goes to investigate. And gets attacked by a shade demon, a very large, angry shade demon. And he runs away. He starts calling for help. And he yells to Lorgar.
Shows up with a white tank top, thinking he's awesome.
Oh, yeah. Lorgar shows up already. Oh, watch this. Whatever you got, I can take it. And gets wrecked again by Korax, because it is Korax. And Korax is no longer has form. He is a shadow of murder and death. He's pure warp, and beats the piss out of Lorgar. At which point, Lorgar bravely runs away.
Sir Robin ran away.
Yeah. And as he runs away, he basically opens a warp portal and goes through it. And as he goes through it, Korax is right behind him and screams at him, I have your scent. I will find you and I will kill you. And that's all we get out of Korax. which is cool. With that, though, that is the end of the story of Korax, but not Raven Guard, as we mentioned at the beginning of the show. The Raven Guard become a minor chapter for millennia. They did not, remember, their Primarch's gone. So now harvesting gene seeds even harder. It is taking forever. So they get almost no lore interactions until M40, so about 8,000 years. It's mentioned that they're at the War of the Beasts, like all the major conflicts, they're present, but not in force. Whereas like the Salamanders, we covered them, the Salamanders kept trying to make the Legion bigger and then couldn't because they kept getting involved in fights they shouldn't have been involved in and then losing half their numbers again. So
poor Salamanders, and then they got into some like giant things, but continue.
But unlike the White Scars, GW did not forget about the Raven Guard. Starting around M40, they start coming out. And by M41, they start playing a major
players
in the lore.
I like this because they...
Oh, it's awesome.
Well, Raven Guard are one of my favorite armies to play because they're an infantry-based army. And I love infantry-based armies. I'm not much of a big tank guy. They do throw down some speeders here and there, but they don't bring a lot of tanks. They don't bring a lot of transports.
In the lore, they don't have Land Raiders. Or they have a couple. Same with even Predators. They just... That's it. They have land speeders and dudes.
And they show up to do a lot of protection engagements when they're basically trying to go into civilian. They fight in, to their credit, they also fight in a lot of places where there's a huge amount of civilians. A lot of places that, you know, big fights go in. There's people, there's cities, but like these guys actually do a lot of, we're trying to protect the civilians first and foremost and win.
So yeah, like basically, they're what you think the Salamanders are, but they actually aren't.
Oh, my God. I like them both.
How many children did they murder? Zero. Still, or intentional. I'm sure they've done it, but, you know, intentionally. I'm just pointing out there. Anyway.
But I love the way that they fight, because they do a lot of hit move, stick and move, and all kinds of stealth engagements. I just like the way they play. I played Raven Guard multiple times on the table. And by the way, in the current 40K on the tabletop, they actually do play very well.
I'd be very careful with that statement, because this is going to come out 3 weeks before 11th edition drops.
Yeah, I'm saying for all of 10th, and they were very, very close. As close as you're going to get Marines.
Yeah, that's the answer.
With the up-down and the stealth and the lone ops and stuff like that. I don't know. Between Shrike and Sean, when they came out, I really like it. We're going to talk about Shrike here in just a second, but the way that they played very Raven Guard-esque. I like that quite a bit for that.
That's very true. So, yeah, let's get into Shrike. So, Kayvon Shrike. Kayvon Shrike's a really good example of what the Raven Guard are. And he's probably one of the better new heroes of the game that they've added from a lore standpoint. So, born on Kievar, he was part of the Hive Gangs, and which means he just was a murder child, like a lot of Astartes are. But he was very good at avoiding detection and capture. I like this story a lot, because he did a good job of avoiding it. Eventually, he did run out of time. And before his enemies could kill him, a chaplain of the Raven Guard showed up and was like, hey, you're going to go be a space marine.
He's like, I don't really want to. And the chaplain was like, yeah, good to hear, man. I wasn't asking if you want to join.
Yeah, this wasn't a, hey, here's your golden ticket, Willy Wonka. Or not Willy Wonka, whatever the kid was.
Charlie.
Thank you, Charlie. Here's your golden ticket, Charlie. This was a get in the van.
I thought it was more Ocean's 11 with Matt Damon at the when they all go into his house. Good idea. You're really enjoying the food? Cool. Get in the house.
Get in the house. So as an Astartes, Shrike starts ascending the ranks quickly. He was a natural talent. He's an exceptional killer and extremely talented at stealth. But he wasn't great at leading and logistics, which we'll get to later. But he was incredibly good at like raw Raven Guard skills. And one of the big ones he does is the Targus campaign. So there is an Orc Wa by Skullcrack, Warboss Skullcrack. This is a full Wa. Targus campaign, these things raging out of control. And the Imperial Guard had been fighting it, but what was becoming a losing battle until Shrike and the Raven Guard arrive. Because the thing about orcs is, and I love them, they're great at a lot of things, but attention to detail is not high on their list. And the stealth capabilities of the Raven Guard start wreaking havoc on the orcs.
Oh, they're hitting anybody that's not completely part of the main force. They're just picking everything off.
Which infuriates the orcs and makes them spread out even more to try and find who just punched me. And so the orc Wa starts grinding down to a halt while they're trying to hunt down all these Raven Guard. Now, what makes it more important, though, is what Shrike does here. Shrike becomes a hero. As this Wa has been raging going around, the Imperium military starts petitioning Shrike, saying, hey, we're going to go take out this Wa over here, or as part of the Wa over here. Can you come help us out? And Shrike doesn't even respond, just gives them the new phone, who dis, and moves on with his day. Because what Shrike was more interested in is that the Imperial military wanted him to help them in battles they were waging, but Shrike was more interested in the people of Targus. Because
let's talk about standard Imperial practices are let people die as long as it will help us out tactically later. So they're just letting Hives get smoke showed, and Shrike was not down with that. He took offense to that.
Yeah, and this actually ends up helping the Imperial force, though, because what happens is the Imperial army pulls out and leaves this Hive, a bunch of people in the Hive going, so we have no defenders, and I'm looking at 10,000 orcs? Like, yeah, probably sucks for you. But then Shrike would come down, and he'd pick at those orcs, and the orcs would then go chase him off somewhere else, saving the Hive. He does this over and over and over again. And what this does was this gives them time to evacuate, or the PDFs, the Planetary Defense Forces, to get together, make up a better defenses to then repel the orc invasion. This is also to the massive chagrin of the Imperial officers, who were just like, hey, I left that place indefensible, and now they're winning. So apparently I'm terrible at my job.
Yep.
But at the end of the campaign, because of all this stuff, Shrike and the Raven Guard have whittled this force down so much that eventually the Imperial military is able to take them out. Shrike, though, is basically a living saint amongst the Imperium. He's not a true living saint, but he's viewed that level of,
well, you say billions. It's huge because these people got left out to dry, you know what I mean? And he saved all of them. Through his actions, specifically his actions.
So he leaves that. The next big thing for Shrike is he goes to a world called Quintus, where the Night Lords and the Alpha Legion have created a rebellion and brought a demon prince into the Materia. I don't really want to get into like all the details because it involves the White Scars, so obviously no one cares. But the Raven Guard.
Shrike and Corso Khan do a shake and bake and take out the prince.
They wrote a lot more for Shrike than they did Corso Khan.
I'm not saying that they did. More. I'm just saying that they
did. But they did shake and bake.
Shake and bake.
Yeah, they did. The two of them did a 100 buddy fight and killed a demon prince. It was cool. But Shrike's biggest thing is actually against the Tau, but unfortunately it was in a Tau book. So, third sphere of expansion, Tau come headlong into the forces of the Imperium. And it's called the Perfectia campaign. And the Tau are pushing into the Imperial lines. And the reason they're able to do this is because they pulled Shadow Sun out of stasis. Now, Imperium had not fought a Tau general this caliber yet. They were used to just normal Tau tactics. So they grossly underestimated Shadow Sun. And Shadow Sun starts wrecking them pretty bad. Shrike reacts to this. He leads a small contingent of Raven Guard in a bunch of these like strike and fades against the Tau to, again, slow them down, make it so the Imperium can bring their full force to bear against what is a very quick Tau army. His plan was simply just to harass the Tau and disrupt their lines. And basically do that, you set up a trap so then when they respond to your disruption, you get them. Problem is, will become a problem. All of a sudden, they realize Shadow Sun is the one responding. So Shrike sends a communication saying, hey, the leader of the Tau is here, and I've got him set in a trap. The problem is that what the current chapter master of the Raven Guard should have done is said, all right, shoot her. But he doesn't. And this is Severax.
He's also chasing glory. Never good. This is kind of what they were trying to show in the story.
Right. And so what ends up happening is Severax radios, I'm on my way. And so the chapter master starts rushing over there because he wants to be the one to kill Shadow Sun. Mostly out of anger. Shadow Sun has killed a lot of Raven Guard, a bunch of, but there is still pride here. In a rage, he comes in, but Shadow Sun can fight. And Shadow Sun kills Severax.
How much did that hurt you to say that?
Shadow Sun can fight. The Tau can't. Like there's like it's hella Tau R. There's like so I don't like the Tau. Like you and I both know they're a ranged combat army. But Shadow Sun's one of like four things that can fight. Now we have those weird twins. Whatever. So in a rage though, Shrike seeing a chapter master killed attacks, and Shadow Sun and the Tau have to basically run away because Shrike is relentless in this assault. But death of a chapter master, it's field promotion time. And so they decide to elevate Shrike as a chapter to be their new chapter master. I will point out that they actually don't end up winning this campaign. They end up having to retreat to the Tau to win this because this is a Tau book. Shadow Sun at the helm, the Tau are winning battle after battle. That part's not important. Shrike leaves and he goes back as a hero. Now, in his heart though, Shrike had doubts. This is why I like Shrike. I like the writing on Shrike. Shrike saw how the former chapter master died because he let pride get the better of him. But Shrike also realized
he would have done the exact thing.
Same thing.
He goes, I would have made the wrong decision also,
yeah.
Which made him doubt is why am I leading if I can already see I would make the wrong decisions?
Exactly. So he looks at people, and this is called out, like Marnius Calgar. I'm not just picking the Ultramarine, but I'm also picking the Ultramarine. But he looks at them and realizes he can't be as analytical and as cold as they are. He's a leader of passion. He wants to lead from the front. He can't just sit back and give orders, right? So Shrike goes to his legion and says, hey, I'm going to continue to lead because you elected me. But as soon as a worthy replacement comes in, I'm going to step down. Because usually, by the way, when a chapter master turns over, except when the Primarch comes back, it's because the chapter master died. So he's saying, no, I'm going
to
step
down. This is pretty cool, though, because this is how Sean gets to be out. And he does follow through.
So with the fall of Cadia and the rift spreading, Shrike sees the real value of Raven Guard, though. So next thing he does is he does something called the scattering, in which he goes to every shadow captain, which is, you know, the captains, and gives them a specific task, but it's a secret task. And the Raven Guard just disappear out into the galaxy. Not disappear, not to be seen from again, but just all over the place. And they're doing recon, assassinations, all this stuff, all designed to turn the tides of battles so that the larger forces can do stuff. At the same time, he takes one for the team and helps GW sell some models because despite not being injured or even upset in any way, he becomes a Primaris Marine because, you know, teamwork makes the dream work. Now,
I do like, he does focus when he sets everybody on these specific things, he does explain to them, and it is explained in the writings, that they're trying to further the people along the trifold path. Like, this is how we fight. This is
exactly. This will give you an opportunity to do this. Let's finish up with Aethon Shan. So Shrike's opportunity to offload leadership came very recently, literally recently. He's a new model. Aethon Shan had been a long-rising member within the Raven Guard, starting the 10th company all the way to first company. Master the trifold path. He had the attributes of stealth akin to Korax, or maybe even the more Morddethian is probably closer. One story is he deploys to Ultramar and Tellian misses him. So Sergeant Tellian's the super
ultra sneaky scout guy.
And even he misses him. So Sean is sneaky. But what makes him so unique is to what Brad was saying is he's really good at the trifold path. All Raven Guard are good at the first one, ambush. Sean can do that. But he's also able to be stealthy. And the big one is he does have the vigilance. He's able to provide direction, orders, and tactics because he knows the full path. He understands how everyone is. He actually can put himself kind of in the shoes of whoever, right? And Sean eventually establishes himself as being this incredible thing. And Shrike looks at him and says, all right, this is the time. Shrike says to the whole Legion, I'm stepping down, and Sean is going to take over. And this is a really good move because Sean can do the one thing Shrike couldn't do. He can step back.
Yep.
And the stories on Sean, again, and by the way, guys, if this feels like I'm not covering very much, there's not much on Sean. He's very new. Like, it was a Warhammer community article.
Yeah, they point out, Sean is now a single loadout model, and he leads from the back because he wants to actually make sure the greater goal is achieved, as opposed to Shrike always felt like he had to lead from the front, and he got too emotional and bloodthirsty and everything else getting into what's going on. And leaving a little bit of the bigger map.
I'll be honest, Sean shouldn't have a model. The way that his lore is written, Sean shouldn't have a model because he shouldn't be on the battlefield. And I like that, by the way. I think it's good to have a leader. It's where they're not present on the battlefield. They're leading from like the command center, telling people go do these things. Now, Sean can fight. That's why they give him a model. But I like it more in the idea that the Raven Guard. Yeah, well, I like the idea of the Raven Guard being spread out throughout the galaxy and having one person being the main coordination helping them out. With that, we're going to call it for now. We will cover more Raven Guard in the future because we're going to do battles they're part of, campaigns they're part of. But for now, that's kind of it. Next week, we're going to do one of our one-off episodes that I like to do. We're going to do Space Hulks, giant floating things of death and despair.
Space Hulk.
We're going to dive into Space Hulks, some stories on Space Hulks, what they are and why they matter in the 40K universe. But yeah, so until then, John Barsotti, Brad Chester.
This guy.
See you guys next week.